that would be P, and then the third one is potassium, and it's not P, it's K. So NPK. So if you send in a soil test to say Texas A&M or someplace like that, and tell them what you want to grow and you know what you're trying to do, they'll send you back a result, and they'll tell you how much NPK is in there. They'll also tell you, depending on what kind of soil test you get, whether there's trace minerals in there. You can pay a lot more money and get a real expensive test, and they'll tell you about all the microorganisms in the soil. So the three major nutrients, or all plants need these three major nutrients in different proportions. So that would be nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And nitrogen is mainly going to be stem growth, leaf growth, mainly leaf growth. So for instance, if you're fertilizing your lawn, what is a lawn? Bunch of leaves, right, with some roots. And so you're going to use quite a bit of nitrogen for your lawn. And if you're growing, say, greens in the garden, like collards or mustard or things like that, lettuces, not so much lettuces, but the leafy greens, you're going to be using nitrogen. And so nitrogen is going to be responsible for leaves. It also is instrumental in producing chlorophyll. And in chlorophyll, plants have to have chlorophyll in order to produce photosynthesis, where they take sunlight, convert it into carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. So it's vital for plant life and growth. So nitrogen, think about leafy vegetables, grasses, and trees, anything with leaves. Phosphorus, your middle number, is going to be mainly root development, flower development, and fruit development. So phosphorus is essential for roots, for fruits, and what else did I say?
Vegetables.
Roots and flowers. Flowers. So blooms, roots, and fruits. Now, phosphorus, nitrogen has a tendency to disappear from the soil and has to be replaced regularly. Phosphorus in some soils, especially in your soil here, can build up over time. So that's where soil tests can be helpful. It'll let you know how much of these nutrients you have and what you need to add. So if you're adding triple 13, which is basically 13% nitrogen, 13% phosphorus, 13% potassium, you're adding that every year for 10 years, you're going to have a lot of phosphorus building up in your soil, and it could lock up other nutrients. So that's the benefit of getting soil tests done. But the thing about soil tests is one soil test is fine, but really you want to have, you know, like a yearly thing, get a soil test where you can see kind of a pattern. And also some years you're going to have spikes and different things for different reasons. So having several years to draw from is going to be more helpful than just a one-off type thing. Soil tests are pretty cheap. I haven't done one recently, but I think the last time they were around $15 to $25, somewhere in that ballpark, for a basic soil test.
So
that's nitrogen, phosphorus. The third one is potassium. Potassium is important because it helps regulate water uptake in plants, especially from the roots. It also helps to control stress on plants, so winter stress from the cold, summer heat stress, drought stress, so all the things that can stress a plant, potassium is going to be helpful in getting that plant to cope with stress better. So those are your three, they call them macronutrients or primary nutrients, but there's other nutrients necessary. There's a category of nutrients called secondary nutrients. So your primary would be NPK. Secondary would be things like calcium, magnesium, and sulfur. Now, this soil in Taylor, in Blackland Prairie, especially in Central Texas, is high calcium. So you got a lot of calcium in this soil. So if you might go into a nursery and see a bag. I didn't bring a bag of gypsum, but gypsum loosens clay soil. So you might see that bag of gypsum and say, well, I need to get some gypsum because I have heavy clay. I'm going to loosen it up. Well, the problem with gypsum, it's about 25% calcium. And if you look, there's a little asterisk up there where it says loosens clay soils. If you look on the back in very tiny print, it says don't use on high calcium soils. So So the moral of that story is read the packet, read the not just the ingredients, but read the directions, and it'll help you figure out which one you want to use to loosen your clay soil. So this is a high calcium soil. Now, one thing that this soil is lacking is sulfur. Sulfur is a very important nutrient for plants, and it helps to regulate pH. It also is going to be very helpful in lowering your pH if you have a high pH soil, but it also tends to moderate calcium in the soil. So if you have a high calcium soil, sulfur is going to be very beneficial for you. So I brought a bag of sulfur. And really simple, it just called soil sulfur. This is elemental sulfur. 1 to 2 pounds per 100 square feet. You do that like maybe twice a year, spring and fall. And that's going to help regulate your pH. It's also going to help regulate your calcium in your soil. A lot of fertilizers will have sulfur added to them because sulfur helps pH, and then the different nutrients in the soil are all going to kind of combine to make nutrients more available. So think of the sulfur as something that's going to lower your pH a little bit for your high alkaline, because this is also high, it's not just high calcium, it's usually high alkalinity here. Is everybody familiar with pH? It's basically a scale from, I don't know, 1 to 14.
0 to 14.
And
we're so like
7.
Six and a half.
You're what?
We're like around 6.5.
Oh, so that's pretty low.
That's perfect.
Well, that's a great pH.
Pretty neutral.
Yeah, so that's a neutral pH is awesome. In general, the Black Pine Prairie soil is generally pretty alkaline-like, especially in Austin, it's super alkaline over there. So if you have a pH, is that at your place, or is that in general in Taylor?
I think that's more of a...
A lot of it's high.
Anything over 7.5 is considered pretty high.
Yeah.
7 is neutral.
That's better than being low.
Yeah.
No, we're not 6.5, we're 7. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's okay. So this is going to be helpful for your soil here because it's going to moderate the calcium and also help lower your pH a little bit. All right. So back to my NPK talk, and I'll wrap that up. Get to some more things that you can add. So we talked about primary nutrients. That's the three numbers on the bag of fertilizer. Secondary nutrients: calcium, magnesium, sulfur. Micronutrients. Now these, so obviously something that's called a macronutrient means you're going to need more of it. It's more important in the soil. Micronutrients are going to be smaller amounts, right? Just think big and small. So micronutrients are essential, but you don't need a ton of them. So that's going to be things like boron, chlorine, copper, iron, manganese, molybdenum, zinc. And there's other ones out there. But basically, they don't have to list those on your bag of fertilizer. Now, some fertilizer companies will list micronutrients. Most of them are just going to list the NPK, the three major ones, because that's what they have to do by law. Now, there's two types of organisms in soil that will help your plant take up these nutrients. So it's one thing to have the nutrients, but you need a soil that's going to be able to take that up to the plant. And plants take up nutrients through their roots, okay? Primarily, I mean, photosynthesis also provides some nutrients, but mainly it's through the root system. So microorganisms in the soil and beneficial fungi in the soil are gonna help your plant take up the nutrients that it needs when it needs them. Now, all that to say, if there was one thing that you would put in your soil that would help every soil, no matter what kind it is, it would be good quality compost. Because compost is going to have food for those micronutrients. It's going to cause them, it's going to give them something to eat, something to live on. It's also going to release different nutrients to those organisms, so they'll be able to multiply and proliferate. But microorganisms occur naturally in the soil, Okay, they're here already. What we're trying to do is increase them because different things can affect micronutrients in the soil, like compaction, drought, salts, which you know if you're using synthetic fertilizer all the time, and that's all you ever use, you'll get a pretty good salt buildup in the soil, and that can affect them. So there's a lot of different variables there, but generally you're going to have microorganisms in the soil, and these are things that you would see through a microscope. You know, you're not going to see them with your naked eye, but these are the things that are going to allow your plant to take up all these nutrients we're going to be talking about. So, any questions on NPK? So if you get a soil test from A&M, for instance, they're going to tell you you need to apply, and I'm just throwing, this is just a hypothetical situation. They might say you need to apply 2 pounds of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet. All right. So how are you going to do that? You go to the store and buy a bag of fertilizer. It's 40 pounds. So you might think, oh, I just need to put 2 pounds of this, and I'm good. Well, this particular fertilizer says 611, so that means that 6 stands for a percentage. 6% of this bag by weight is nitrogen. So I'm not a mathematician, but this bag is 3 pounds. So what you would do, I'm going to use a different bag because I already did the math on the different bag. Some of these people might be good at math. But I just want to give you an example.
We understand.
Because, you know, I'm not a mathematician. If you have a 40-pound bag of fertilizer, and one that we sell a lot of at the garden center is an organic one made by MicroLife, it's a 6-2-4. So it's 6% nitrogen, it's 2% phosphorus, and 4% potassium. And it weighs 40 pounds. So what you do is you multiply whatever your nitrogen is. In this case, it's 6%, so that would be 0.06. And you're going to multiply that by how many pounds you have. In this case, it's 3 pounds. And that's going to tell you how many pounds of nitrogen are in that bag. So is there anybody here really good at math?
No, but I got a calculator.
So 0.8 pounds of nitrogen, and you got to put out 2 pounds of nitrogen according to that soil test. So that's, you know, when you get one of those soil tests, you're going to have to, people come in all the time with their soil results, and they're like, what did I do, you know, because they tell you put this many pounds of this out, and don't put this out. So on the 40-pound bag that I was talking about, the MicroLife, it's 6% nitrogen, so that's 2.4 pounds in a 40-pound bag. It's 0.8 pounds of potassium and 0.8 pounds of phosphorus and 1.6 pounds of potassium. That would be a 40-pound bag of 6.24. Now, if you have a bag of ammonium sulfate, which is ammonium sulfate is 20% nitrogen, that's a 24. Synthetic fertilizer. So that 24. One will be like 2100 or 2000, no phosphorus, no potassium. And it usually comes in a 50-pound bag. That would be 10 pounds of nitrogen. So all this to say, you got to do a little bit of math if you're going to be adding according to a soil test. They'll tell you how many pounds per 1,000 or per 2,000 square feet or whatever. And all you do is you multiply the number by the weight of the bag to get your percentage or to get your amount. And remember, that means 6%, so it's 0.06, not 6.0. And that's 1% and 1%. All right, any questions about that? I know I went fast on that, but if I had a whiteboard, it'd be a lot easier. All right, so if you want to use whatever fertilizer you want to use is fine, but because a plant really doesn't care, it needs those nutrients, and whatever form it gets them in, it's going to use them. The difference between synthetic and organic, there's several differences, but basically organic fertilizers are naturally slow release. They're also less water soluble. So if you put out, say, 10 pounds of ammonium nitrate or ammonium sulfate, and then you get 2 inches of rain, the plant's only going to use up so much of that at one time. The rest is going to go down the gutter, end up in your stream, San Gabriel River, lake, you know, and aquifer. The organic fertilizers are going to hold in the soil a lot longer. They're going to be a lot better on the environment. I'm not like an eco-terrorist or anything, but I do like the fish. I like my rivers. I like my streams. And, you know, I think we should take care of the planet. And I don't think we should value, you know, that over human life, but I do think we should take care of where we live. We should be good stewards. So anyway, there's my little preaching spiel. No more preaching. So organic fertilizer is going to improve your soil health. It's going to release nutrients slower. It's going to reduce runoff into the environment. And it's also going to be better off for the microbes. And that little blurb that I got on the two types of organisms that help plants take up nutrients, that came off of A&M's website. So even, you know, Texas A&M, and I'm a Longhorn, so I know Reagan's an Aggie. They acknowledge that we need the microorganisms in the soil in order to get plants to grow. And so I would prefer to see you use more organic. You can blend them together, organic and synthetic, and that's fine. But just be aware kind of what you're doing. Alright, so last thing I want to do is talk about a few of these things I brought. So this is lava sand, and this is basically ground up lava, right? So from volcanic activity. Lava sand is great for adding minerals to your soil. It's also great in clay soils for loosening up your clay. It's better than, say, builder sand or any kind of commercial sand that you can get, because it's a different particle size. Actually has the ability to increase drainage, but it also can hold moisture, because lava, the process of all that lava superheating up, it puts a bunch of air bubbles into it. And so you have all these little tiny air bubbles in here that are going to hold oxygen, and they're also going to hold water, and they're going to hold nutrients. So lava sand is great for clay, for improving your clay soil.
Great for palmarias too. Yeah. They like it a lot.
Yeah, I bet they do. Because they come from Hawaii, where they have a lot of volcanoes. Expanded shell is another thing you can use for clay soil. Just think of expanded shell as like a bigger piece of lava sand. It's more like it's almost the size of pea gravel. And it's basically rock that's superheated and it expands. And in that expansion, it gets air bubbles similar to the lava sand, but it's, you know, it's done in a kiln instead of in a volcano. Doesn't have the minerals of lava sand, but it does have the ability to introduce oxygen into your clay soil, and it stays there. So organic matter will help too, but organic matter decomposes. The expanded shell takes a lot longer to decompose because it's basically more like a rock. And so that will stay there. It will have those air bubbles that will hold nutrients and hold oxygen. It's from a particular rock mineral. I can't remember the name of it. But they heat it up, it's a clay basically.
Okay.
And they heat it up and it expands. And in that expansion, it gets all those air bubbles in there. So really, it's not adding nutrients, but it's holding nutrients and it's holding oxygen in your soil. All right, bone meal. So bone meal is phosphorus, that's that middle number on your fertilizer bag. There's another good source of phosphorus called rock phosphate, that's a rock mineral. The reason I brought bone meal instead of rock phosphate is rock phosphate is high in calcium. And so if your soil is already high in calcium and you want to introduce phosphorus, you might want to use bone meal instead of rock phosphate. It doesn't have quite as much calcium. It's just phosphorus. It's probably some, a little bit of sulfur. There's a small amount of calcium in there too. All right, so earthworm castings. So earthworm castings are great because they have a lot of beneficial qualities in them that are good for plants. it doesn't burn. You can use it as a fertilizer. You can use it in your potting soils. In fact, a lot of good potting soils have earthworm castings in them. And it also has different hormones in them. Let's see if I can find my little note on that.
Like, if you were
going to
put those earthworm castings with your potting soil, how much, like that bag, how much would you mix with a potting soil?
I would read the directions because I don't know.
I'm talking about. Okay.
So, you know, you don't use a ton of it. For potted plants, well, that's a pretty good amount. So, 8 ounces for a good sized pot of soil. Assuming that your soil doesn't already have it in there. But it's great for vegetable gardens because it has a lot of bacteria in it, and vegetables are kind of bacteria dependent.
So how much of that would you use for, say, 100 square feet?
Okay, so on the, basically, if you're doing it, what most people do with this is they would put it right under their transplant.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're sticking your plants in the garden, you put like a tablespoon. I mean, it's kind of pricey to be doing like a giant garden with it, so you're going to be more spot treating with this because it's you know, unless you're making your own, it can be a little expensive, a little cost prohibitive. So, you know, some of these nutrients you got to use. You know, you could spend a fortune on your garden, but my suggestion is instead of trying to put everything in at once, just try to do something every time. Put something in there, maybe that's different, and you're going to be adding something that the other nutrient that you had before didn't give it. The third number on the fertilizer is potassium, and kelp is a great source of potassium. This is called super seaweed because it has kelp in it, which, you know, basically is seaweed, but it also has humic acid, molasses, and fish emulsion. So this is, you know, humic acid is really great for all plants. It's basically derived from Leonardite shale, I believe up in North Dakota somewhere, but anywhere there's coal and lignite, you'll find humic acid. But it's very beneficial for plants and for nutrient uptake and also just overall health and vigor. So you can apply, and so my point was, a lot of these products now, they're you can get just straight seaweed, but a lot of these products now, they're blending them for you. So, you know, back in the day, you would, you know, I remember natural gardener John Drongle would say, you know, use molasses, kelp, seaweed, and fish, mix it all together. Well, now they pre-mixed it for you.
Wow.
Just to give you, so another benefit of seaweed is it's a great root stimulator. This is a bottle of root stimulator. If you turn it around and look at the ingredients, derived from kelp. So this is basically seaweed, right? And so that's all it is. And it's a wonderful root stimulator. Seaweed has very, very beneficial for root growth, but also since it has potassium, remember we talked about potassium being good for stress on your plants? Well, a lot of people, you can rescue a plant that's stressed. You know, I've thought about pouring some of this on myself every now and then because I get stressed. But plants really like it. It really helps them deal with stress, whether that be drought, whether it be transplanting, moving it from one location to another. Seaweed's a great tonic for that. And then a lot of people use it in the fall to winterize their plants, to harden them off for the winter, because potassium is great for, I know John Drumgold used to call it, and I don't know if it was him or Malcolm Beck, but used to call it antifreeze for your plants. So it really does help your plants weather a cold winter. So that's a great thing. And you know, liquid is, you would either spray it on your plant or water it on your plant in a water can. You can buy kelp meal and introduce that to the soil, but that's another one of those products that's pretty pricey. You know, a small bag of kelp meal is going to set you back about $20. You might be able to, used to be able to get big bags of it for fairly reasonable, but I don't think you can anymore. All right, what do I got? About 5 minutes, 2 minutes?
That's normal. time to stop. One thing about Medina, you know, they've been around forever. And just a quick story about Medina. They've always put the beneficial microbes in their products. They just never told anybody about it. So Andy Chedester, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but she used to run the ladybug stuff for Dromgool, and she was in charge of the ladybug line. And then, so like the ladybug fertilizer and all the different amendments. Well, they sold that to another company, and they kind of screwed it all up. But so she went to work for Medina, and she was telling them, y'all have all these microbes in your product. You need to put it on the bottle. People don't even know it. So now, and she, you know, she got her way. So now if you buy a bottle of Medina, it tells you, you know, how much bacillus, how much, you know, different bacteria, how much streptomyces, which is a great natural organism that fights fungus and disease. So anyway, they have them all listed on here. They never used to have that before. It's not that they changed their product. They just started telling you what was in it.
Was that Has to Grow?
That is actually their fish blend.
Okay.
And that has a lot of good stuff in it. Let's see. It's got all the microbes in it. It's got molasses, apple cider vinegar, and humic acid from Leonard Eichel.
Okay.
So the apple cider vinegar is a good anti, it's basically a preservative. And the molasses is going to give you sulfur and sugar. Microorganisms love sugar, just like me, right? But it's actually good for them. It's terrible for me. All right, I'm going to wrap it up. One other product, that, in fact, this could be y'all's door prize. This is Humates Plus, because and this has humic acid, fulvic acid, silica, kelp, black sweat molasses, amino acids, and coconut wetting agents. So this is a great product. It's just a good overall tonic for your plants. Any questions?